although nausea burns in the pit of my gut. Don't speak of her again in my presence. I step back, spinning toward the crowd.
Have you met her then?
My mother asks, her hands running down the front of her deep purple gown, her grey hair strung up so tightly it pulls back her face. The Dowager Queen never looks anything less than perfect, after all, regardless of the fact she just spent hours travelling here from our country estate. I have, I reply, a cloud of smoke puffing from my mouth and swirling into the air from where I lie on the couch.
And?
She continues, leaning forward in her chair. What would you like me to say, Mother? I sigh, running a hand through my hair and sitting up to meet her gaze. That she's everything you're not. She is. She scowls, and my insides tingle with glee, happy that I'm wedging a grudge before they've even met. I can't wait to see how my little doe fares against her.
I wish you'd stop smoking that hashish, my mother quips. It's a disgusting habit. You don't need anything else to mar your reputation.
A chuckle works its way through my throat. The scabbed-up wounds from when I was a child, and still yearning for my mother's love, throbbing as if they're new.
I'm having a hard time caring about your wishes, Mother, considering you never took the time to care for mine. That's not fair, she huffs.
There's a tense pause in the air, and just when I've decided she's actually going to shut up and allow me silence, she speaks again.
I know you're sad about your father. We all grieve, and if anyone understands, it's me. But it's been 2 years. It's time to move on, and...
I stand from the couch and move toward her, my jaw clenching so tight my teeth crack.
Do not pretend to know about my grief.
Crouching down once I'm in front of her chair, I flick the ash from the end of my joint and rest my hands on her knees, staring up at her.
Where were you the night of his death?
She lifts her chin.
That's none of your concern.
Bile burns the back of my throat, my anger so palpable I can taste it in the air.
You surely weren't sharing his bed, since that's where he was found, his skin tinged blue and all alone.
Her spine straightens just as a knock sounds. One of her ladies moves into the room and walks toward the door before opening it. Timothy walks in, clearing his throat and bowing deep.
Your Majesty, may I present Lady Beatro? She's here for tea.
My chest pulls tight at her name, and there's a sudden urge to stay, if only to protect her from my mother's sharp tongue and claws. Ridiculous, considering I was just fanning the flames, wanting to create the destruction myself. My mother pats my hands.
Tristan, darling, I'll speak with you later.
I grab her palm and kiss the back.
We'll continue this conversation later, Mother.
Spinning around, I meet the eyes of Lady Beatro, looking beautiful as always and strong-willed as ever. Good. She'll need it.
Chapter 26. Sarah B. I hadn't expected to meet with the Dowager Queen in private, but she sent for me, as if I was a pathetic servant just waiting for her to come and call. Truth be told, I don't wish to see her, but my uncle urged me to go, stating how important it is to stay in her good graces until I'm in a position of power. So, I strapped my blades to my thigh, dressed in the most expensive day gown I have, allowed Shayna to cinch up my corset extra tight, and here I am, taking in shallow sips of breath while I follow Timothy down the hall. Do you know the Queen Mother? I ask him.
I do, he replies.
And? He quirks a brow.
And what?
Well, what am I walking into here, Timothy? Is she the rose, or is she thorns?
Milady, she's no rose,
he chuckles as we approach her door, turning to face me.
But neither are you. I think you'll handle yourself just fine.
Maybe I should be offended by his words, but instead there's a comfort that spreads through my chest. Because he's right. I am no rose, and I like that he sees me enough to know that. The door swings open, a young lady in a simple pale blue dress smiling and stepping to the side, allowing us to move into the room. My hands are clammy, making my pink lace gloves stick to my palms, but I breathe in as deep as my corset allows and straighten my shoulders to fake the confidence I'm not feeling inside. We're in her personal quarters, a place I've never been, and I'm struck at how similar to mine the sitting room is. Deep browns of wood accent the red and cream wallpaper, and a fire crackles in the centre of the room. There are two burgundy couches facing each other, and at the head are two brown leather chairs surrounding a small round table, already set with a tray of tea and white china with blue birds and gold trim. None of that, however, is what catches my attention, because from the second I walked into the room, I could feel him. A hum that weaves through the air and dances on my skin, wrapping around my middle like rope. I try to resist glancing his way, I do, but I give in, acknowledging, perhaps for the first time, that my self-control with the prince is severely lacking. My father's pendant weighs heavily around my neck. Our eyes lock. Tristan's gaze peers like I'm an animal at a circus, and even though he's across the room, it feels as though I'm on display just for him. My already shallow breathing stutters as he flicks his stare down to my décolletage, my thighs tensing to stem the ache flaring between them. Timothy clears his throat, his hand grazing my elbow, and it's only then that I snap out of it, tearing my eyes away and focusing on the woman I'm here to see. Queen Gertrude Farsar, the woman who stood by while her son killed my father, watching him hang for daring to question the crown. Rage burns bright in my gut. I step forward, dropping into a curtsy, the pale pink hem of my dress fluttering on the ground at my feet. Your Majesty?
Come here, girl, she snaps. Stand up straight and let me get a good look at you.
Her words slice through the air like a knife, demanding and almost cruel in their tone. I move forward, and when I come to a stop before her, her eyes squinting and jaw setting as she catalogues every piece of me, I've never wanted to revolt more.
So, you're the girl here to marry my son.
Her eyes trail up my form.
Do none of your ladies know how to tame those wild curls?
My back stiffens at her shallow insult, but my confidence surges, realizing that she's resorting to petty remarks instead of bone-deep jabs. I let out a small laugh.
Curls like mine are difficult to tame, ma'am. My ladies do what they can with what God gave me.
I tilt my head.
Perhaps you could do my hair one day and show them how it's done.
Her lips purse.
And what makes you worthy to wear a crown, Miss Beatro?
She smiles, and I move without waiting for her invitation, sitting down on the couch next to her.
Please, make yourself at home, she quips.
I smile so wide my cheeks ache.
Thank you.
Tell me, she nods toward one of her ladies, do you come from nobility?
My father was a duke.
The same girl who opened the door steps forward, pouring tea into the fine china before moving back to her place against the far wall.
And what does he do now? The Queen Mother continues.
The pit in my stomach gapes wider.
Rots in the ground, unfortunately.
A sharp laugh from behind us catches my attention, the sound making my stomach flutter. I twist my head, glancing at Tristan, who's leaning against the door, his black boots crossed at the ankle. I'm not sure why he's still here, but oddly, I find his presence comforting. Almost as if he's standing at my back instead of hers.
So, he's dead then? She asks.
I turn my attention to her, the butterflies in my belly dissipating as soon as she speaks.
He is, ma'am,
I confirm, although the conversation is sending a wave of anger through my veins. She doesn't remember him. She knows my name, knows where I'm from, but doesn't even remember. There have been many moments where life has smacked me upside the face and opened my eyes to the realities that drain your innocence away. But this is the first time that I realise how one experience can be so vastly different for two people. To me, my father's murder was life-altering. But to her, it was just another day. I vow right here to never take death for granted, that even if people's lives end, I'll pray for them and the families of those who loved them. Everyone deserves to be remembered, even if it's to imagine their soul burning in the pits of hell.
Pity.
She picks up her tea, swirling a spoon through the liquid for long moments before tapping it against the side of the cup, the clinking sound sharp.
Both of my boys lost their father too. She shakes her head. But of course, you'd have known about that already.
I nod, tangling my fingers together on my lap. It was a momentous day indeed to learn of King Michael's passing.
We still mourn, she sighs.
Yes, Tristan cuts in. Tragic. If you'd like to fixate on your husband again, Mother, by all means, let's continue our earlier conversation.
My heart skips at the sound of his voice, and curiosity winds its way through my heart as I glance back and forth between them. He speaks to her as if he can't stand the sight of her, which is so different from everything I've learned of them over the years. I've always thought the Farsar family was a cohesive unit, loyal to only each other until the bitter end. And even though I realised that the king and his brother don't get along, I never imagined that would extend out to the Dowager Queen as well. Not that it makes a difference. In order to end the Farsar reign, I must eradicate them all.
Tristan, you may leave, his mother states.
Twisting toward him again, I smile. Yes, there's no need for you at all. He smirks as he straightens off the wall and walks toward us. He's wearing all black, as he usually is, his jacket covering the tattoos I ache to see, even though I convince myself it's to admire his art.
How can I, when the conversation just became so interesting?
He asks, dropping next to me on the couch.
I think I'd much rather stay.
Please don't, I retort, although there isn't much conviction behind my words. He tisks, the sound skipping through the air and tapping against my skin as surely as if he touched me with his hands. His legs splay wide, and he flings his arm across the back of the couch, the tips of his fingers dancing perilously close to my shoulder. My body coils tight, muscles stretching thin as I lean to the side to ensure that not a single piece of me touches him. He's making it hard to focus, although maybe that's his goal. I'm convinced he loves to watch me squirm. Infuriating.
And tell me, Miss Beatro, the Dowager Queen continues, how is it that a lady without a father can hold herself so well in polite society?
My chest cracks at her words, but I keep the reaction from showing on my face. The same way a widowed queen does, I suppose, with a heavy heart and a strong sense of self. Her eyes flick down my body before meeting my gaze again.
A queen's duties are far superior to that of an orphaned child.
The urge to reach out and strangle her grows so strong I have to tangle my fingers together on my lap. I look forward to becoming queen then. I run my palms down my skirt. Is it nice? She tilts her head.
Oh!
I laugh. I'm curious if you enjoy not having those duties anymore. I'm sure you're grateful that you can live your days at a cottage in the middle of nowhere, with no responsibilities left to your name. She stiffens, her gaze narrowing. It sounds very relaxing, I continue. Maybe one day, after I wed your son, we'll be able to visit, and I can reassure your doubts by showing you all the ways I've improved on the foundation you tried to build. She sets down her teacup, the liquid sloshing over the sides as she turns to glance at her lady in the corner. Tingles race along my spine when I feel a delicate brush at the nape of my neck, and I suck in a breath, my insides tangling tighter than they were before. Tristan is touching me, his fingertips ghosting across my skin, making goosebumps pebble down the length of my body. Panic at his mother seeing mixes with the thrill of being touched. And instead of leaning away, I press back, my stomach flipping and surging until it settles next to my racing heart. I don't dare look his way, but I can feel him staring. And I shouldn't enjoy it how I do.
Chapter 27. Tristan. It takes skill and precision to weave magic with your words, and it's something I discovered at a young age I had a knack for. Even as a child, I could trick people into thinking that my ideas were theirs, so I spent years fine-tuning the craft, until I was able to tell people to go to hell in a way that they enjoyed the trip. Which is why seeing Lady Beatro hold her own against my mother by using those same tactics was intoxicating. She's strong-willed. She's fire. She's the devil parading as a snake convincing people to eat the apple. Ma petite menteuse, my little liar. It's what's needed in a queen. You can't have a fresh-faced innocent girl ruling kingdoms. But the thought of my brother having her at his side when it turns out she's so valuable makes bile tease the back of my throat. Violence thrums in my veins, urging me to kill him now and steal her for my own. Within a fortnight's time, my brother and all who aid him will fall, and I will step into place as the rightful heir to the throne. But having a queen was never in my plans. "Ready?" I ask Edward, glancing at him as we walk to the banquet hall. The murmurs grow louder with every step, bleeding through the walls, and I smile, an excited energy humming beneath my skin. "Everything will work out in the end," he smiles. "Of course it will," I drawl. "Failure does not run in my blood." He smirks. "Technically, your brother has that blood too." "Unfortunately, that's true." I grimace. "I suppose I'll have to drain him of every drop." Edward chuckles as we approach the dark wood doors, the deep grey metal hinges creaking as he pushes them open and we step inside. People's attention coasts across my skin, infusing me with strength as I feed off their energy. The banquet hall is drenched in black and gold, our family flag flying high above our heads, long tables covered in white linens running next to the walls. The largest of them is perpendicular to the rest on a raised dais, overlooking the room, and my brother sits dead center, flanked by his bride-to-be and our mother, his advisors filling the other seats. My stomach pulls tight as I glance over the faces of all the people who have stood in my way, people who have never shown me the respect they give Michael when he's done nothing to earn it. Heads turn as I make my way down the stone aisles, my boots clacking on the floor and echoing off the sky-high ceilings. "The scarred prince," someone murmurs. Once upon a time, that phrase cut deep, but now I use it as fuel, knowing that soon anyone who dares speak against me will have to beg for repentance at my feet. My brother hasn't noticed me yet, deep in conversation with my mother and Xander, but my little doe is a different story. A dangerous heat crawls up my insides, knowing that while it's her and Michael everyone is celebrating, it's me who has her eyes. Edward makes his way to one of the side tables, taking his spot next to other higher-ranking military and immersing himself in conversation. It's important to have plenty of eyewitnesses to attest that we were here. I stop walking when I reach the platform, rocking back on my heels, my gaze never leaving Lady Beatrice. Her head tilts, brows furrowing, and I smirk, my tongue swiping across my bottom lip. She fidgets in her seat. "Tristan," Michael says, the deep bass of his voice bouncing off the walls. "What a lovely surprise." Slowly I move my eyes from his betrothed's to him. "Did you think I wouldn't show, brother?" One can never be sure with you, he chuckles, waving his arm at a servant. Bring him a seat.
Lady Beatro.
I let her name slide off my tongue, my attention falling back on her.
You look devastating. My brother is a lucky man.
A few gasps sound from behind me, no doubt surprised that I would be so bold. Excitement flutters in my stomach, wondering how she'll react, how my brother will react. She smiles, tipping her head, but I see the flash of irritation swirling through the deep brown of her irises.
Thank you, Your Highness. That's very kind.
I know your manners are rusty, Michael cuts in, his eyes blazing. But be careful how you speak of my soon-to-be wife. His hand reaches out and grabs hers, and she turns toward him, her features softening as she tangles their fingers together on top of the table. Green gusts whip through my middle, and my jaw clenches so tight it cracks. I tear my eyes away, worried that if I don't, I'll storm the dais and rip his fingers clean off his body, making sure he can never touch her again. I make my way up onto the raised platform and walk behind the backs of every chair, until I come to stand behind my cousin, Lord Takan, who sits next to my little doe. The treacherous witch. Bending down, I press a hand on his shoulder, the diamonds of my rings glinting as I squeeze. Cousin, it's been a long time. His body stiffens, wine goblet freezing halfway to his mouth.
Tristan, what a delightful surprise.
I lift a brow.
Is it? When was the last time I saw you? I ask. At my father's funeral?
He clears his throat, placing his cup on the table, his fingers tapping a nervous rhythm on the top.
I believe so.
Wow. I whistle.
2 years. Incredible.
A servant interrupts, a large chair being hoisted between their arms, and amusement dances through my middle when Takan is forced to move out of the way to make room for me. Once my chair is in place, I sit down, my legs stretching underneath the long white linen tablecloth that covers my lap. I turn my body toward my cousin, but I reach out with my right arm, placing my hand on Lady Beatrice's thigh. Her entire body stiffens, her fork clattering when it falls on the plate.
Are you all right? Michael asks her.
My palm grips her tighter.
What?
She laughs.
Oh, I'm just fine. Thought I saw something is all.
Tell me, cousin,
I grin at Takan.
What have you been up to since I saw you last?
My fingertips create small figure eights against the fabric of her dress, crawling up her leg, pausing when I feel something bulky. Her muscles tense, and I realize she has what feels like a dagger strapped to her. Smirking, I glance at her from my peripheral.
Such a devious little minx.
The vision I create in my head makes me harden, imagining her bound and naked, nothing touching her skin except the silver of her blade and the heat of my lips. My palm skims upward until I press into the crease of her inner thigh, my knuckles hitting the bottom of her corset as I force the fabric of her dress to meld to her skin. I can feel the heat of her cunt, and I bite back a groan, my hand kneading her flesh. My stomach flips when her fingers slam down on top of mine. Takan wipes his mouth with a napkin, but his movements are jerky, beads of sweat forming on his brow, his jaw grinding back and forth.
Your brother has made me the Viceroy of Campestria.
A Viceroy? I raise my brows.
How quaint.
I tighten my grip, the tops of my rings pressing against my little doe's palm. Her hand moves off mine and I dip my fingers in farther, leaning back in my chair and grabbing the wine glass from the table to bring to my lips. She skims across my thigh, fingertips brushing against the edge of my erection. A cough whips through me, the wine burning as it races down my throat. My cock throbs, desperate for her touch. I'm half tempted to pick her up and throw her on top of this table, pushing up her dress and planting my tongue in her pussy, just to hear what her moans sound like in the beautiful acoustics of the hall. I surge forward, my lips parting as she teases the side of my length with the back of her palm, the fabric jostling and creating a friction that has me close to coming without her even fully touching me. Liquid oozes from my tip, and my fingers grip the meat of her thigh so tight I'm sure I'll leave a bruise.
Sarah, sweetheart,
Michael's voice cuts through the fog, and her hand disappears as quickly as it came. I'd like to have some time with you alone before the ball begins. She blushes as she gazes at him. I clench the edge of the table, my knuckles lancing white from the harsh grip.
Of course, Your Majesty,
she croons. She places her palm in his, and they rise. But before they can move, a large crash clatters through the hall. I turn to my left, shock spiraling through me when I see my cousin collapsed on top of the table, grasping at his neck. His body spasms as if he has no control over his muscles. Red capillaries burst in his eyes, and I'm frozen in place, transfixed at the sight of him. A scream sounds from somewhere beneath the dais, and someone rushes forward, pushing me out of the way as they aid him. I allow them to move me, a sense of dread winding through my middle, recognizing that my cousin is poisoned, and not by me.
Chapter 28. Sarah B. Strychnine. Not the most subtle of poisons, but I didn't need subtlety. I needed something that had no known remedy and would work quickly. Lord Tarkhan is harmless, a sacrifice for the greater good. But somewhere in the deepest part of me, I could feel a piece of my soul wither and chip when I slipped the powder in his drink and watched it dissolve, knowing I was serving him nothing but death. Lord Tarkhan is first cousins with the king, which makes him a Farsar, and although not high in line to assume the throne, he is in the line, and my thirst for revenge won't be quenched until I've eradicated every drop of Farsar blood from the earth. Michael's hand trembles as he grips my forearm, beads of sweat forming on his brow as we're escorted by a corral of guards, led by Timothy and another man in uniform with shaggy blonde hair. I can't remember his name, but I know he was the one who restrained that woman with Lord Reginald's head. Xander stomps in front of us, running a hand through his hair as if he can't calm his thoughts. We file into Michael's office, and Timothy grips my elbow, his eyes scanning me from head to foot, as if he's worried I too ingested poison that will paralyze my airways and have me seize until I die.
I want to know,
Michael's voice shakes the walls.
What the fuck that was?
Xander paces back and forth in front of the desk. He's a talented actor, I've decided. After all, it was him that slipped me the poison in the first place.
The ball must go on, Xander chirps. This is the perfect time for you both to come together and reassure the people. Show them that in adversity we find strength.
He points between Michael and me. In each other. I scoff.
Do you ever think of anything besides politics?
His lips turn down, a sinister glaze coasting through his eyes. The door flies open and Prince Tristan storms through, a dark energy swirling around him, making it feel like the temperature drops just from his presence. I shiver, my heart thumping in my chest. He does not look happy.
Tristan, Xander snips, it's always death that brings you around, isn't it?
Tristan's footsteps are heavy, his long black jacket floating out behind him as he cuts across the room. Xander's eyes widen, and he backs away until he bumps into the lip of the desk. Quick as a flash, Tristan's hand shoots out, gripping Xander by the face until his cheeks smush, his glasses pushed until they're crooked and bent on his forehead.
Tristan, please,
Michael sighs, rubbing his hands over his face. His jaw tenses as he lifts Xander up until his toes are kissing the ground. There's a tendril of worry for my cousin, but I'm so surprised by the sheer energy radiating from the prince that I'm frozen in place, a heady sensation flooding through me as he dominates every other man in the room just by choosing to be in it. My eyes track along the rings on his fingers, moving over the thick veins in his hand. My thighs press together when I remember that same hand dipping between my legs while dozens of people watched, none the wiser. I regret not taking the opportunity of feeling how much I affected him when I had the chance.
A family member has just been poisoned in our home, yet you still speak to me as if I won't slice up your body and feed it to the mutts for dinner, Tristan spits.
Nausea rolls through me at the visual his words create.
I wouldn't recommend it to you or your highness, Xander stutters out, wincing when Tristan's grip tightens. I'd be so gamey, not an appetizing meal at all.
The prince sneers, dropping Xander to the ground, and I rush over, crouching beside him and helping him to stand.
Be civilized, I snap, glaring up at Tristan.
His eyes rage like a wild storm, all of his playful banter gone as if I made it up in my head. My heart stutters against my ribs as I hold his stare, and for the first time, I get why they fear him. My uncle's warnings blare through my brain.
The scarred prince is unhinged, Sarah. Stay away from him until necessary. Do you understand?
How do you know it was poison?
Michael questions.
Because I'm not an idiot.
Tristan breaks our connection and spins toward his brother.
Did you not see the convulsions, the struggle to breathe, the quick and torturous death?
Michael sucks in a breath.
He's dead?
Tristan chuckles, the sound rumbling deep in his chest.
Hyenas!
Xander hisses. My brows rise to my hairline, irritation at the disgusting name bleeding through my pores. I get what he's doing, pinning the murder on the rebels. It wasn't the plan, but I see the appeal of using them as scapegoats to help us hide in plain sight. Still, the thought of innocent people being hurt drops in the centre of my chest, weighing me down until my legs tremble. Hopefully, I can finish the job before it comes to that. Michael huffs.
Here, in the castle.
They've made it in the castle before, I speak up. Is it so far-fetched to believe they could again? Tristan leans against the wall, the muscle in his jaw tensing and releasing. He pulls a joint from behind his ear and rolls it over the cupid's bow of his lips before slipping it in his mouth. And even though it isn't an appropriate time or an appropriate reaction, my stomach tightens, desire pooling between my legs. After our night under the stars, I don't know that I'll ever look at smoking the same. He grabs a match from his pocket, a few wayward strands of his jet black hair falling over his scar as he leans forward to light the end, the flame making his features glow a warm shade of orange. His eyes flash when they flick to me, and he straightens, allowing the fire to burn down the wooden stick until I'm sure it's grazing against his skin. But he doesn't even flinch, doesn't even move. I swallow. Stuck in his gaze like quicksand. He smirks, smoke seeping out of his mouth and curling into the air.
Regardless, there's nothing to be done for it now, Xander says, snapping me out of my daze.
My chest twists as I turn my attention away. Michael paces back and forth, his eyes bouncing from one wall to the next, and I bite the inside of my cheek as I take him in, wondering why he seems so uneasy, when a few short weeks ago, a decapitated head rolled at his feet and he couldn't be bothered to care.
Don't worry, Xander continues. I'll take care of everything.
Chapter 29. Tristan. Do you think it's a rebel? Edward says, adjusting the cuff on the edge of his uniform. Someone who's grown restless and took matters into their own hands. A shot of rage fires through my chest at the thought of a rebel disobeying me, and I glance at Edward, distrust weaving through my mind. Why would somebody wish themselves a torturous death by my hands? I ask. They have to know that's what would await them. He nods, rubbing at the scruff on his jaw. Do you think it's Alexander? That pathetic little bird? I think everyone is suspect at this point. I rise from my seat, making my way to the corner of Edward's room and staring into the mirror perched on top of his chest of drawers. Even Lady Beatro. Defensiveness slams down like a concrete wall, cracking my foundation with its force. I spin to face him, tilting my head. If you have something to ask me, Edward, do it. I cannot stand guessing games. He swallows, lifting a shoulder. I mean nothing by it, but she is an attractive woman. I clench my jaw, tamping down the urge to cut out his tongue for speaking of her as if he has any right, as if he has any clue of how devastating she truly is. She's my brother's. He glances at me from his peripheral as he comes to stand next to me in the mirror. Yet you warned the rebels not to touch her. I sigh, tiring of his line of questioning. I will be the one to kill her, Edward, preferably while Michael watches. My mind flashes back to the dinner, when she brushed against my cock, then placed the same fingers in Michael's hand, smiling up at him like he was her world. A sudden thought strikes me like a sharp slap to the face. What if it was her responsible for Takan's death? She's always sneaking around in places she doesn't belong, has knives attached to her thigh, and plays the part of a doting royal, when I know for a fact she's a silver-tongued snake. She was also sitting next to Lord Takan at the banquet. A huff of air escapes me as the puzzle pieces slot together, a cool trickle of relaxation sliding down my insides at the realization. Of course it would be her. My little liar. I expect to feel anger, but instead I grow aroused, delighted that if it is her, she's far more nefarious than I thought. It makes me want to push her, see how far she'll go until she breaks. My cock rises to half-mast from her devious deeds, and I sink my teeth into my bottom lip, biting back a groan. Recognizing that this makes her even more attractive to me than she already was. I straighten my black vest, then walk to where my black tailcoat is thrown across the chair, picking it up and easing my arms through the sleeves. This changes nothing with our plans, I say to Edward, a sly grin creeping along my face. Might as well make tonight a 2-for-1 special. The last ball held in the Saxon castle was when Michael assumed the throne, throwing the most lavish event since the turn of the century 10 years prior. I didn't attend. Must have slipped my mind. Still, I knew that by presenting Lady Beatro to the court, she would be the center of attention. However, I didn't expect for it to affect me the way it is. I watch her from the shadows of the ballroom, my blood bubbling like a vat of acid as I watch her paraded around on the arm of a dozen different men, all clamoring for a chance to dance with their future queen. My brother sits next to my mother, in a blocked-off area meant for the royal family, underneath a shimmering black and gold awning made of the finest drapery.
She's quite the beauty, isn't she?
A slurred voice murmurs behind me. I glance over, annoyance lancing through my bones that someone thinks they can speak of her. That irritation only grows when I see a short and stocky man, with far too many jewels and red hair as bright as the sun, swaying in place, his wine sloshing over his glass. Lord Claudius, the Baron of Salter, which is a town across the plains of Campestria near the southern border. He used to spend summers with our family at the country estate, and has always been quite envious of my brother, almost to the point of obsession. Hello, Claudius, I sigh. Good to see you're still quite the little creeper. He grins, tipping up his glass and draining the wine.
And you, your highness, still lurking in the shadows, still hiding from your brother like you did when we were kids.
Chuckling, I spin around to face him, dwarfing him with my shadow. Were you even invited tonight, little man, or did you sneak your way in to be close to Michael? I reach out, gripping his shoulder. Maybe if you put on a dress, you can trick him into thinking you're a whore, and he'll let you slurp on his cock the way you've dreamed of for years. His face drops into a furious scowl, and he rips himself from under my hand, storming away without another word. My eyes follow him as he walks to the center of the ballroom, tapping the shoulder of the young man dancing with Lady Beatro, and replacing him, his grubby fingers gripping her waist and pulling her into him. Anger eats through my skin from the inside out when he touches her, her smile becoming forced, eyes flashing with unease. Normally I'd enjoy her discomfort, but only when it's at my hands. He dances them around in a simple foxtrot, his palm moving farther down her waist until he's skimming just above the curve of her ass. I'm 2 seconds from shoving my way through the ballroom and flaying every single one of his fingers, but before I can, she extricates herself from his grip. He bows as she moves away, heading across the shiny tiled floor and out into the hallway. Anticipation tightens my muscles as his beady eyes stalk her, and I see the moment he makes the decision. He stumbles his way across the floor, following her out of the ballroom doors. I glance at my brother, expecting him to be seething with rage, but instead he's busy looking off to the side of the room, making eyes with one of the servant girls standing against the far wall. Disgusting. Cracking my neck, I weigh my options. I could follow them, or I could ignore it. Sarah Beatro is not my problem. Normally I wouldn't care. I shouldn't care. But I do.
Chapter 30. Sarah B. I feel him behind me before I see him. I've barely made it to the door of the ladies' washroom when I'm spun around and pulled into a dark corner off the main hall, pressed against the stone. "Get your hands off me," I hiss, glaring at the ruddy face of Lord Claudius. His wine-soaked breath is putrid, even more volatile now than it was when we were dancing. This is the last straw of my sanity. After having been paraded around on the arms of several men, dancing until my feet went numb. When Marisol had me practice, I had assumed it was to dance with my husband-to-be, not with everyone else attending. But Michael has barely spared me a glance all night. He gave a half-hearted speech about how his cousin had been ill long before this evening and how he was lucky to have me at his side through the sorrow of his loss. But since then, he's been a ghost, pawning me off as if I'm an obligation he can't wait to be rid of. "You'll regret this when you're sober," I try again, pushing against the lapels of his tuxedo.
"You're a beautiful woman, Melody," he slurs. "No one would blame me for sampling the goods."
"His Majesty would blame you," I reply, panic creeping through my muscles. "You'd be put to death." His fat fingers slide down the front of my ball gown, scrunching the satin and lace, his forearm pressing against my windpipe, increasing pressure until my airway starts to close.
"No one would believe you," he chuckles. "You're practically begging for it."
Sharp razors slice down my throat as I struggle to breathe. I glance down the hallway as best I can, hoping to see anyone around to calm the situation. But no one is here. His hips press against me, the thick ridge of his erection prodding my stomach as his palm grips my sides. I attempt to move my arms, hoping that I can get to the daggers on my thigh, but his body weight is bearing down and I have no control of my limbs. My father taught me to be proficient in swords and daggers, and my aim with a pistol is almost perfect. But he didn't train me well enough for this. I allow my body to go lax against him, hoping that if I stop fighting, maybe he'll loosen his grip. He grunts, thrusting himself into my belly, grinning as spittle flies from his mouth onto the side of my neck. He pulls at my skirts, the sound of the fabric tearing like an arrow to my chest, fear bleeding in to mix with the beats of my heart. He continues his trek until my stockings are exposed, running his hand underneath my chemise, his meaty fingers slipping to the inside of my thigh, bypassing the lace frill of my drawers until he meets my skin. I'm thankful he either didn't feel the cool metal of my daggers, or he's too drunk to notice, and bile crawls up my throat, nausea churning so sharply, I pray I vomit all over him, if only to get him away. "Fucking heavy dresses," he mumbles, his arm pushing harder against my throat. He moves back to adjust, his hand centimetres away from brushing the soft curls between my legs, and I take the opportunity, my heart slamming against my chest as I reach next to his palm and remove one of the blades from my leather garter. I snap it up to his throat, pressing the sharp edge against his jugular. He drops my dress and stumbles back, tripping over himself, his eyes growing wide. "Be careful who you corner in dark hallways," I hiss, liquid heat surging through my veins. "You never know which one of us has hidden claws." Now it's me who moves into him, walking us backward until he slams against the opposite wall, his hands flying up in surrender. "Should I end your life here?" I ask, running my hand down the front of his person, disgust and rage mixing until I'm gagging from the taste. I bypass the waistline of his pants and grip his testicles in my palm, twisting through the fabric until he cries out. "After all," I continue, bringing my lips close to his ear, "you're practically begging for it." I squeeze tighter, my wrist rotating so his skin stretches even more, and I can feel his Adam's apple bob beneath my knife, my hand jostling with the movement. A thin cut appears when I push the edge of the blade in farther, blood trickling down the front of his esophagus and over his bow tie until it stains the crisp white of his shirt. It would be so easy to slit his throat, and my body vibrates with the need. I grit my teeth, forcing the blade deeper, his laboured breathing stinging my nostrils with its stench. There's a loud clack of shoes echoing from down the hall, and I step back, hiding the blade behind my back, not wanting anyone to see that I have one or that I know how to use it. Both of us stand, stunned and in silence, Claudius swaying in his spot. Eventually, the footsteps disappear. My body flies forward as I'm jostled from his stocky frame shoving by me, running down the hall until he too disappears from my view. I consider chasing him for a few moments, but the adrenaline has already worn off, being replaced by a heavy, sick feeling that weighs me down from the tips of my toes to the top of my head. Sinking against the stone wall, I raise my hand to my mouth, muffling the sob that breaks free. My eyes slam shut, trying to stem the tears, afraid to let them fall, not wanting to give that pathetic excuse of a man any more power than he's already had. But a few escape anyway. They're hot as they trail down my cheeks, and they feel a lot like failure. "You're okay. You stopped him. You're strong." I stand back up on shaky legs, making my way into the washroom, my body jumping with every single creak of noise, my nerves nothing but frayed edges unravelling at the seam. He didn't get far, yet somehow I still feel like he stripped something of mine away. My dagger trembles in my hand as I reach out and turn on the faucet, running the blade beneath the water to wash away the small drops of blood, hoping that maybe by doing so, it will also cleanse the scratches he's caused on my soul. Because while he didn't take my innocence, he took something far worse. My dignity. And I'm not sure how to gain it back.
Chapter 31. Tristan. I follow them. Of course I follow. How could I not? But by the time I find them, it's already too late, and I'm greeted with the sight of Claudius's filthy hands ripping at her dress, and his disgusting hips pressing into hers. My logic flies out the window, chest tightening until my lungs shrivel, charred from the blaze of fury racing through my insides. I can't move. I can't hear. I can't speak. I can only think one thing. Mine. The word shakes through me like an earthquake, cracking my foundation and all the defenses I've built up with it, creating a chasm so deep there's no way to dig myself out. Lady Beatro, Sarah, is mine. I see our future laid out before us clear as day. Me sitting on the throne, and her at my side. Because why not? Why shouldn't she be at my side? Fucking dress. Claudius's mumble snaps me out of my frozen state, and I move forward, my sole focus on reaching him and murdering him, bathing in his blood while I stake my claim on her body and soul. My limbs tremble from the violence brimming inside me, its talons scratching beneath the surface of my skin until it cracks and bleeds. How dare he touch something that belongs to me? She shifts then, and the energy changes as she holds a blade to Claudius's throat, and my heart stutters, my cock growing stiff when passionate words pass her pretty little lips, threatening to kill a man where he stands. I make it 2 steps before I freeze again, watching this fierce, incredible woman who can twist and turn into whatever she needs to survive, take care of the threat herself. A sudden shot of arousal mixes in with the anger, creating a sensation I've never felt. It's not an unwelcome feeling, not anymore. With acceptance comes clarity. My little doe is no doe at all. She's a hunter, pretending that she's prey. I lean against the wall, my hand coming to rest over my heart, pressing firmly to keep it from bursting through my ribcage and exploding on the floor. She's a fucking vision, the kind that should hang in galleries and be revered by the masses, the perfect type of art. Mine. Footsteps sound from the distance and I move quickly to avoid being seen, not stopping until I'm standing at the end of the hallway, next to the portrait of my great-grandfather. Eventually they fade, and then only thick silence surrounds me. I strain my ears, but don't hear a peep. I wonder if she killed him. Disappointment settles in my chest, wishing I could have seen her do it, that I could have gone along for the ride. But then another set of footsteps sound, and a gift is given when I see Claudius's grimacing face as he runs down the hall toward me. My hand snakes out before my mind can even process it's happened, my rings cutting into the skin of my fingers as I grip his neck, dragging him into me, his back slamming into my front. He gurgles from my grasp, but my palm slaps his mouth, my hand pinching his windpipe, feeling the muscle crunch beneath my touch. "Shh, don't be afraid," I murmur. I move my palm away from his lips and reach up, tilting my great-grandfather's portrait to the side, the wall disappearing from behind me. I sink into the entrance of the tunnels, pulling a squirming Claudius with me. Once the wall slots back into place, I spin us around, tossing him to the ground, reveling in the sound of his skull cracking on the hard stone floor. Blood spatters from the impact, and he groans, rolling onto his back, his hands coming up to grasp at his head. Anger percolates in the base of my stomach, and I try to tamp it down, closing my eyes and breathing deep. He moves to stand, his arm shaking as he pushes himself off the ground, and I step forward until I'm hovering over his torso, the thick base of my boot pressing into his chest and shoving him back down. "Oh, Claudius," I tisk, bringing a joint from behind my ear and biting the end with my teeth while I dig in my pocket for a match. I fish one out of the box and strike it against the side, the sound loud in the cramped space. Crouching down as I inhale,
I let the sweet tang of hash sit on my tongue. What shall I do with you? He groans, his eyes hazy and unfocused. I strike him against the face so hard my hand tingles. No passing out. Stand up and come with me. His brows draw in. No. Reaching out, I grip his arm and pull him to a stand, bending it at a 90-degree angle. His knees buckle, but I hold him upright. It wasn't a choice. Adrenaline pumps through my veins, fueling my strength as I half carry him through the tunnels and into the dark forest until we reach my cabin in the woods. There's no light on the path, but I've traversed it so many times I know it by heart, so the trip is quick. I kick open the door, leaving a dusty imprint from the bottom of my boot, and toss Claudius inside, his body slamming against the worn wood of the floor. The joint hangs from my mouth as I twist to face him, narrowing my gaze. You've always been a very naughty boy, Claudius, but I don't think I can let this one go. I pluck the hash from my mouth and place it in the ashtray on the small oval table that sits to my right before walking over to him. He's pushing himself to a sitting position, blood dripping down the back of his head and onto his neck, the thin gash from where Sarah cut into his throat already having scabbed over and dried.
Your brother will hear about this,
he mumbles, his words slow and slurred. I sigh, blowing out a breath until my cheeks puff. You've always underestimated me. He scoffs. It's fine. I wave my hand, walking toward the cupboards where I keep all the tools used for maintenance on the cabin. I'm used to it. The world underestimates me, and it will be their downfall, as surely as it will be yours. I grab what I need before twisting back around and taking slow and steady steps toward him. His head lolls to the side and his body sinks, falling from where he was leaning on his elbows and dropping back down to the floor. Oh no, I tisk, twirling the hammer around in my hand. Don't tell me you're about to lose consciousness. We're just about to get to the fun part. Smiling, I stop when I'm next to his head, bending and smacking him again, irritation squeezing my center at the fact he thinks he can pass out and not experience every single iota of pain that I'm going to cause him. His eyes snap open and once again, he tries to jerk upright. I wouldn't do that if I were you. I walk around his body and crouch down to hover above his kneecaps, one leg on either side of his body. Do you know why you're here with me, Claudius?
Because you're insane?
He lifts his head and spits at my feet.
I am the Baron of Salta and your brother's friend. You cannot do this and get away with it,
he forces out. Ooh, I grin.